I'm Ashley Gallagher from Pharmacy Times, and you're listening to the Pharmacy Focus mini-series, Star Power, Celebrity Endorsements in Pharma. A four-part series including pharmaceuticals, vaccines, Ozempic, and public health. In this episode, we talk about advertising, multi-component interventions, and awareness initiatives, as well as the impact of celebrity endorsements in various pharmaceutical products. In a review published in the International Journal of Nursing Studies, the author stated that multi-component interventions, including addressing specific populations, increasing knowledge and awareness, addressing mistrust in information, and engaging community leaders, can be an effective strategy for addressing misinformation. In an interview for Pharmacy Focus, Dr. Alfred Latrelli, the Senior Director of Pharmacy at UPMC Presbyterian Shadyside, discussed the use of these interventions, saying that they were effectively used to address vaccine hesitancy and foster positive impacts on vaccination rates.
So it's actually like a great source of pride that we've all had here as pharmacists and other healthcare providers, because we are all pulling together pharmacists, pharmacy technicians, pharmacy students, nurses, nursing students, physicians, residents, non-clinical team members, and so on, coming together, and we're addressing that mistrust and that misinformation. You know, so we're working together, you know, across the spectrum to meet the community where they are and have a relatable person for them to talk to. You know, it might be a pharmacist, maybe it's a student, maybe it's someone non-clinical, maybe it's a nurse, et cetera. So together, you know, as a healthcare discipline, we're all coming together and doing that. I know that I personally had several patients who needed more information to decrease their anxiety, some who just wanted a little extra personalized support. I think, you know, personally, I view it as my job to provide, you know, the accurate information, provide the human connection and the support so people can make the decision that's right for them as to if they get vaccinated or not. So, you know, that's a strategy that I know many other disciplinary colleagues of mine had that really allowed that multi-component type of intervention to come together, where we're connecting with different types of people and different types of settings and getting to them with the information that's necessary for them to make an informed decision. We also did a lot of partnering with different community groups and leaders. During the height of the pandemic, these community influencers, you know, whether they were religious leaders, local figures, et cetera, they championed vaccine efforts throughout our region. Their endorsements, their support helped build trust within our communities because they're from that community and a trusted member within it. These are the communities that we as healthcare professionals serve and encourage individuals to take part in vaccination campaigns as members of those communities ourselves. So, you know, being from those communities, partnering with people also in those communities really led to a much stronger showing than it would have been if it's just us as healthcare providers out there on our own. This is something that we really need to continue doing as a healthcare profession. Because, you know, there is power in connecting people to accurate information.
But vaccine misinformation isn't the only incorrect information out there, as Dr. Christina Madison, the public health pharmacist, reminds us. She said that it is essential for patients to be able to differentiate between misinformation, which she defined as unintentionally false information, and disinformation, which she defined as intentionally misleading information.
So the one thing that I would like the audience to understand specifically around this topic is that there's a difference between misinformation and disinformation. And understanding that there could be an intent to mislead people versus telling a falsehood and not realizing that that is something that could be harmful to someone. And so just making sure that you're checking to see if whoever you're with and whoever you're listening to is using a reputable source. You know, you really do have to kind of take everything from a standpoint of it could be false, right? And so when you look at it as it might be false, then you can make sure that you're digging in and seeing, is this a reputable source? Is this something that I can believe? And when in doubt, do your own research. Look into it yourself. I always say, you know, you can always ask Brother Google. He is there for you. And then you can always look to see, is it a government email? Is it a government website? Is it a EDU at the end, associated with a university or an academic institution? That's usually going to be a reputable source. And so if you do your due diligence and you look into things, or, you know, go to your local pharmacist, you're likely going to be able to make a good decision.
One such example she gave us is how OTC herbal, dietary supplements, and vitamins are regulated and marketed.
I think the biggest thing is understanding that it's kind of the Wild West when you think about like herbal supplements and dietary supplements and vitamins and those kinds of things on the market, which, by the way, are not held to the same rigorous standards that drugs that are approved by the FDA are. And so I think first and foremost, it's understanding that there is a very distinct difference between the two groups. So things that are OTC, things that are over the counter, herbal products, those are not held to the same standards versus, say, like your OTC cough medication or your OTC pain reliever. Those have been, they've gone through the FDA process and found to be safe in order to allow for someone who is a layperson to use that product without the recommendation of a healthcare professional, versus pharmaceutical products that have been FDA approved. Those typically need to be counseled upon by a pharmacist. They are prescribed by a healthcare professional. So those are the differences. When you think about sort of this, you know, proprietary blend that they put on the label, I mean, they're basically hiding what's in the product. And unfortunately, because of the way that our structure is, you know, it allows for that. So again, you have to do your own due diligence. You have to look into what those products are. You should be investigating the ingredients that are inside that product.
In fact, in a study published by student pharmacists in Currents in Pharmacy Teaching and Learning, the authors concluded that approximately 30% of celebrity endorsements of over-the-counter medications violated the laws, and nearly 35% made claims that were not supported by evidence. So how do celebrity endorsements affect the patient's perception? What do pharmacists think about this? Dr. Madison tells us that there are pros and cons to celebrity endorsements.
The big thing that I think that I would start off with is that there's good and there's bad to this, right? So the good thing is that we have people that have basically instant credibility because of their celebrity status, talking about medications, talking about vaccinations, talking about public health initiatives. And that brings awareness to the space and helps people to be able to feel like they have that know, like, and trust factor in order to make an informed decision about their healthcare. So that's the good part, right? The bad part is that direct-to-consumer advertising is one of the biggest challenges that we have within pharmacy. So direct-to-consumer advertising for pharmaceutical medications, as well as supplements and, you know, dietary products, are really kind of separate. So, you know, with pharmaceutical products, there is regulation there. And so there is a little bit of a gatekeeper, but with a lot of these supplements and dietary, vitamins, those are not regulated. And so I think having sort of these claims of, you know, being healthier, having better skin, you know, losing weight, you know, all of these things may or may not be true. And so we really just have to do our due diligence to make sure that the information is coming from a reputable source. And so, yes, we may have a celebrity endorsement, but we do have to remember that these people are being paid for their time, and that may cloud some of the judgment or some of the information that they could be telling us. And taking that celebrity endorsement with a grain of salt, understanding that the claims that they're making are the company's claims, and that those claims do not necessarily have to have the same rigorous testing and research, and that those claims have to be proven before that product goes to market. And so the way that I think of it is, it unfortunately it does harm whether or not people believe other future celebrity endorsements. And that it does make it really challenging for the average consumer because they don't know whether or not the information that they're getting is false. They don't know if it's partially true or if they can take it and they can run with it and they can go and get the product and feel safe that they're taking something that is going to be beneficial to them.
So will celebrity endorsements actually drive patients to the pharmacy? One example of a celebrity endorsement in pharmaceuticals would be Pfizer's Nurtec commercial featuring reality TV star Khloe Kardashian, and another featuring pop star Lady Gaga. Dr. Latrelli said,
"Yeah, I do think it will, drive more people because, you know, these endorsements really do align with the multi-component interventions that we were discussing, including, targeting specific populations, which are, in this case, fans of the celebrities, increasing, knowledge and awareness about the medications, addressing mistrust through the credibility of the celebrity, and so on. Celebrities, endorsing medications for specific conditions, such as like migraine in the case of Nurtec, can raise awareness among their fans that are affected by those conditions. So you've got two subsets, right? Their fans and then the fans that are affected by the migraine. So they might get missed by people that see that message and are unaffected by migraine, but that's not who uses these medications, so that's not our target. But then there's the people that don't relate to the celebrity, and the message might be missed with them because they might not relate to the message because they don't relate to the celebrity. What is interesting about all of this to me is, we have to remember that patients can't just take these medications without a physician and a pharmacist. So it brings them in to talk to us. If you're looking at a choice between two medications and I saw Lady Gaga takes this, I would like to take this too because I have whatever condition. And the conversation's being held with a healthcare professional that can balance the influence of the endorsement with more comprehensive medical information that we know about the patient's condition, the medication itself, its efficacy, its safety, sustainability, compliance, adherence, for individual patients, and say, yes, that's the right medication for you, or no, we have something similar to what Lady Gaga takes, but this is really what's going to be the right medication for you. So I think that, there's a benefit, even if it does get the idea of a specific brand or a specific medication in somebody's mind, because, we're really, there's a gatekeeper, right, to make sure that we're doing what's right for the patient.
Dr. Troy Trigstad, Executive Director of CPESN USA, had this to add.
My own personal belief, which is not founded in any data points, that the type of product and condition and whether or not a person's, how the endorser is affected by that can be really important, right? George Foreman endorsing the George Foreman grill is a different thing than a celebrity that might have breast cancer and is using a certain oncologic agent. That's just a different, those are not in the same, they might be in the same neighborhood, but they're not on the same block, so to speak, right? I think the more serious the condition, the more effective it is if the celebrity is either affected, their son, daughter, mom themselves has it, it's affecting them, and they're speaking to an audience and saying, I am you, you are me, here's what I do, here's what I've done, here's how I view the world. Versus Gatorade is an electrolyte. Gatorlyte is sort of competitive to Pedialyte. There's that sort of brackish water in the middle there that you don't really see as a medical intervention, might be more of a food product or an OTC that's kind of a medical intervention or a supplement. There's a whole world out there, the murky middle, where I think celebrity endorsements are likely to be more conventional. It's just a name that's associating with something. It's not a name associating with a condition. Yes, athletes, we sweat, we need, nourishment, go Gatorade, sure. But when we're talking about our world of pharmaceuticals, that celebrity being affected by the condition and speaking to the audience that also is affected by the condition feels to me like it would be a much more effective speaker and audience engagement.
Dr. Latrelli added that the form of the endorsement and the presentation might be just as meaningful to patients as the endorser themselves.
We have a large variety of different, ages and generations of people in our workforce that, have different familiarity and comfort with the technology. I know with my kids, you know, they're constantly on these apps, and you know, that's how they're connecting with, you know, society. You know, whenever you look at all of those differences, you know, I do believe that the choice of media type for promoting information, especially in pharmaceuticals and healthcare, can impact the effectiveness of the message. You know, whenever you think about it, you know, there's a perception in different generations, right? But then there's also, you know, the media source where television is something that's broad. It's effective for reaching more diverse, more spread out audiences, more age groups, more demographics. The production values are typically higher. There's more of a cost to entry into, you know, putting something on TV. The content's usually more visually appealing, professional content. It seems that there's a tendency where people may perceive that information as more trustworthy. We're always vetted fully by some regulatory body because, you know, some commercials have, you know, that subscript information about what it does and what it doesn't do. So yes, you know, I know that there's a public perception about what is on television versus social media. But social media does allow for targeted advertising. You're reaching specifically into specific demographics or niche audiences that you can have people engage directly with the content. They can share it. They can post their comments and thoughts and likes and participate in discussions. And it fosters a sense of community. It's two-way. It's not one-way like the TV. Social media is also, again, more cost-effective. It allows for more frequent touch points with those, you know, targeted groups because of cost, other things like that. There definitely is a difference in the audience that you reach with each of them, as well as the amount of times you're able to reach them to have a message stick. So I really think that both have unique benefits and drawbacks. You know, the difference is really, you know, which can be more effective in which situation. You've got to consider the target audiences, message tones, you know, what amount of money you have, cost constraints, budget, et cetera, the desired level of interactivity and engagement. You know, are you really trying to set up a culture around this? Are you trying to be more informational? So yeah, I definitely see the differences. I see benefits and drawbacks to both, in all honesty.
But are these the only media that can be used? Logic, a rapper, has a song called 1-800-273-8255, which at the time was the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline number. In a study published in Health Promotion International, the authors found that when asked about different health topics and health information, the students in Africa actually quoted health advice from popular music videos. Dr. Andrew McNabb, a professor from the University of British Columbia, said,
"Music is very much part of their everyday life. The use of cell phones is very widespread, and so YouTube downloading MP3 files of songs is almost universal. They're constantly listening to music. And what you have in a music video, which contains health information and health advice, is ideal health promotion material. It provides the information, but because the song is listened to again and again and again, and listened to as well as seen as a video, very often on television, you get repetition of the message so that it imprints and those facts are retained. And because the celebrities are recommending those behaviors, they are in many ways endorsing them, and the young people want to follow suit. So what we found was that there were a number of videos that the facts that these youngsters were relating to us came from."
The authors downloaded the videos from YouTube, printed out the words, translating them where necessary from the local languages, to examine the content for the health facts they provided, and looked at the style of the video to see if they fell into educational entertainment. Dr. McNabb added,
"The ones that had the most impact included scenes that illustrated the health messages. They contained text which gave specific advice. There were words in the song which set the scene and again gave examples. This was news to us. This is why we wrote the paper, to explain the relevance of these music videos as a health promotion tool and the potential value of using both music as a medium and celebrities as the health messengers.
Though celebrity endorsements can be useful, celebrities aren't healthcare providers, and because of that, some claims can be made that qualify as misinformation, Dr. Luttrelli said in the interview. He added that patients could be influenced more by the celebrity's popularity than the scientific merit of a product or the health information.
In a, you know, more extreme case, could lead them to, you know, exhibit a pursuit of something against, you know, what the healthcare, you know, data or the healthcare recommendations are. So it could lead them down to a path, you know, that isn't, you know, data backed, you know, the right choice for them, and something that the medical community wouldn't support. I think that celebrity endorsements can inadvertently contribute to misinformation or misleading claims because, to your point earlier, they aren't healthcare experts. So if they make statement about a product, and they think they know the information, but they substitute a word or trip up over something, or, you know, don't have accurate information, it can lead to public confusion, and it can lead to even, you know, potentially harmful decisions, because now, you know, the celebrity that's endorsing something could have misrepresented it to create, you know, potentially harmful decisions without even knowing it. So I do think those endorsements and the form that they're presented to people are pretty meaningful. We discussed earlier, you know, TV ads versus social media. You know, obviously a TV ad with a, you know, production crew, you know, more rehearsed, probably backed by the company or somebody else who's, you know, helping with the scripting, you know, very different than, you know, a social media post, you know, randomly where somebody says something that gets out and hits a lot of people.
But celebrities come in many forms. A celebrity to one isn't necessarily a celebrity to another. As Dr. Trigstad put it, tapping into local trust centers are powerful and could be more powerful in smaller, more rural areas of the United States. He added that the healthcare provider can sometimes be one of the most educated ones there. Dr. Christina Madison echoed this response and said,
"So shout out to all of my community pharmacists, colleagues that are on the front lines answering these questions. This, we are the gatekeeper, right? Like, ultimately, when people have questions, especially for things that are over the counter, I would highly recommend for pharmacists to get comfortable being in that OTC aisle and to see what's out there, because that's really going to help when you have people come and ask you for questions. Or just even go walk out of the pharmacy and go down the self-care aisle and ask people if they have questions, because a lot of times people may feel embarrassed or they may not feel comfortable going and talking to a pharmacist because they feel like, oh, the information's on the bottle, I can figure this out for myself, right? And so when I was working in the community pharmacy space, this is many years ago, full disclosure, it's been since about 2008 since I've worked in a community pharmacy setting, but I used to do that. I used to go in the self-care aisle and I used to ask people if they had questions, because I felt like that was me providing good patient care, because I think that we all need to have that confidence that when we take something home and we put it in our mouth, it's gonna do what it says it's supposed to do. And so I think that that's where we can really shine as a profession, is by being that gatekeeper, by being that educator, by being that patient advocate, to allow people to feel like they have the most accurate information possible in order to make a good decision regarding whether or not they should take a product or if they shouldn't take a product. And if they tell you, well, you know, if it's good enough for Khloe Kardashian, it's good enough for me, that's fine too, but we do want to make sure that we tell them about the alternatives as well.
In conclusion, Dr. Trigstad said that celebrity endorsements are useful to start the conversation, but pharmacists serve as the medical liaison to patients.
it's an entree to a conversation. So most healthcare professionals get into healthcare because they believe they can acquire or they have innately an ability to connect with someone to help improve their life. And if they believe in the medical, pharmaceutical, cognitive, behavioral, whatever the modality of information, the intervention or the intervention is, they believe they can help somebody. And if Travis Kelce and Anthony Fauci and the Kardashians and you name the celebrity can help them start the conversation, the assumption then is that the healthcare professional takes it from there, right? You don't end the conversation with Travis Kelce, you start the conversation with Travis Kelce, or Travis Kelce helps them get to you. If there's interventions or pharmaceuticals out there that the pharmacist doesn't necessarily believe in, that could work the other way. And I also think it's a good thing that not all of our medical experts and pharmacists agree on everything at all times. We all swear an oath to, you know, evidence and science and the scientific process and so on and so forth, but that doesn't mean that there can't be rational disagreements about between healthcare providers. That's fine.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Pharmacy Times Pharmacy Focus miniseries, Star Power, Celebrity Endorsements in Pharma. Tune in next week as we discuss celebrity endorsements in vaccines.